Hey guys, this is Colin from the Busby Babe back with another Rooney Rewind. This week I'm joined by Gaz Drinkwater. He's a presenter and podcaster for Full Time Devils, and he joins me for a conversation on what some may consider Wayne Rooney's prime years of form. So anything from the 2009-2010 season, his first 30-goal season, up through 2011-2012, and a little bit of the end of the Sir Alex Ferguson era in 2012-2013. It's a good conversation, and thanks for tuning in.
Rooney and Ronaldo wait in the center. Rooney! Magical Manchester United! It defies description. How about sensational? How about superb? Just no stopping him. Wayne's World is the place to be.
Welcome back to the Rooney Rewind. I'm here with Gaz Drinkwater, a full-time Devils YouTube channel and the podcast. Gaz, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm very good, mate. You know, you said just before we came on air then, you said, I'm just going to get into podcast mode. I'm just going to get my podcast voice on. And I was a little bit worried. I was thinking, oh no, he's going to come back like, hey guys, this is the podcast. And I was like, oh no, what have I signed up for here? I'm glad you just sound exactly the same.
Full American radio personality going. I'm going to have the sound effects exactly and everything. Same. Yeah.
Woo!
Well, we're here to talk about Wayne Rooney, and we're getting back on the chronological end of the podcast. So, where we left off last time, everything was strawberries and cream at Manchester United. 3 straight years of Premier League titles, back-to-back Champions League finals, and 1 successful Champions League final. And now we're in the summer of 2009, and Cristiano Ronaldo is sold for £80 million, at then a world record. Now that's what will get you Harry Maguire. And where are you at in the summer of 2009, Gaz?
Wow, where am I at in the summer of 2009? So I think I've just finished year 9 in school. I'm not sure what the American equivalent of that is. I'm thinking how old I'd be. I think I was about 14, probably. And yeah, I was just dicking about in school, essentially causing mischief on the streets of Altrincham. But yeah, in terms of Manchester United, I think that might have been the first year. No, it wasn't, because we had a season ticket for the Moscow year, definitely. I think it was probably our fourth year actually of having a season ticket. And me and my grandparents actually went to Moscow thinking about it, the summer of 2009. So we were in Moscow in 2008, but obviously we had the Champions League final in 2009 as well. And me and my grandparents were at that. So we were probably, that was probably the most interesting thing that happened to me in summer 2009.
Yeah, I was actually the same age. I turned 14 summer 2009, and I was busy tearing Cristiano Ronaldo's face out of all the Manchester United stuff I had hung up in my room. So,
oh really? You know what? You know, you think back now and you praise him and you think, oh, he's such a legend. We all love Ronaldo. But I've gone on Facebook recently and it comes up with like your Facebook memories from like 10 years ago. I didn't realize how much I hated him.
Yeah, I still am kind of bitter about it, honestly.
Be bitter. He'd gone on to do amazing things.
No, he's a tremendous football player, no doubt. But I don't know. There's definitely a period where I was thinking, I was watching the Manchester United teams and thinking, what if he had stayed? You know, and it's just so painful because that team was so good, and I hate Real Madrid so much.
I kind of know what you mean, but there was always a saying before Ronaldo that there's only one way after United and it's down. It's what Fergie used to say, you know, there's no way you're leaving United and your career's going in an upward trajectory. And Ronaldo was obviously the objection to the rule, and now it seems to be every other player who leaves us has a better career.
Yeah, and I guess he is a sort of anomaly in football in general, because it's not just an age defying, but it's, he's doing this at the same time as another player doing similar things, you know, with Lionel Messi. We're two, probably the two best footballers that we've ever seen coming up at the same time.
Without doubt.
Yeah. So, at this time, who I would argue was maybe the third best player in the world, Wayne Rooney, left at Old Trafford in search of a new strike partner, because Carlos Tevez was also leaving, going to the noisy neighbors, who at that time were a bit less noisy. And he's left with Dimitar Berbatov and new transfer Michael Owen, who is the new Manchester United number 7. Do you think that, and we talked a little bit about the Glazers before we started recording, but is this the first summer that we really, you know, step on the brake and start to panic a little bit about the transfer policy at Manchester United?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When it all first kicked off in 2005, I was maybe slightly too young to remember it all happening. I remember the fuss that was being made over it, but there was obviously massive protest. Mm-hmm. A new football club even set up, which is still going to this day, FC United of Manchester. And this was the first one that I really understood what people were talking about when they were talking about the financial matters at Manchester United. And I was really confused, especially when you heard what was going to be happening at City. I was thinking. I remember that summer. I used to read a magazine they have here in the UK. It's like a kids football magazine called Match, and it had like all of the different targets that United were going for. And this is so bizarre, but I've gone through my old drawers recently, which has all my old magazines and stuff like that in, and I found a copy of it, and on there is a section for Manchester United's expected transfer targets for around that time. Genuinely, I think three of the players were Kompany, Silva, and Aguero, and I was like, that is so bizarre. And it's actually telling how the different investment has gone into the different clubs. But yeah, I remember expecting that Ronaldo money to bring us big things, and then to see Owen take the number 7 shirt.
Yeah, and I've got the transfers pulled up. These are the four that Manchester United actually brought in. So Michael Owen on a free transfer, give him the number 7 shirt. Gabriel Obertan, remember him from Bordeaux. Mambirim Diouf from Molde. And Antonio Valencia from Wigan. I actually ended up being pretty good for the next few years, and is only just now leaving the club. So at least there was one that went the distance with his career. But still, that you're replacing what, 40 goals a season about, with Michael Owen, Gabriel Obertam, and Mambirim Diouf up top.
And it was purely because the owners weren't ready to dedicate that money to the team. And it's pure and sort of in a way, you can I don't want to say you can understand it from their point of view, because they were, you know, they bought United on borrowed money. In my opinion, it was practically illegal how they owned Manchester United in the first place. But from what they're looking at, we're just winning trophy after trophy after trophy, and they're not having to put any money in. But there is surely people at the club, and Fergie is actually to blame for this a little bit, that is well aware that these players are performing well above their standard because of Sir Alex Ferguson, and that when this eventually goes, we're going to be in big trouble if we're not regularly investing like the rest of the world.
Yeah, and you definitely saw it. It's more clear, I guess, when Ferguson actually left a few years later, and you see players like Phil Jones and Chris Smalling, their development just stunts. Because at one point, believe it or not, younger listeners, Phil Jones and Chris Smalling looked like they could be the center back pairing of the future. Phil Jones was Sir Alex Ferguson's like choice man marker in the 2012-2013 campaign. He stuck him on Cristiano Ronaldo in the Champions League round of 16. And it's just such a marked difference from... I think it really accentuates the kind of impact that a manager can have, and particularly Sir Alex Ferguson, it just supports his claim for the best of all time.
He was a genius. Yep. I don't want to I almost don't want to criticize some of these players because they've been such integral parts of title winning campaigns for us, but certain players at United over the last 15 years would they wouldn't have won the league with any other team. Like, you know, the amount of games that players like Darren Fletcher would get, and I hate to say that because he was a great player, but he wasn't a title winning player. We had Mikel Silvestre getting loads of games for us, I remember. And even the younger players that wouldn't have been given the chance in other teams. Sir Alex Ferguson, man, he's like my second dad.
It's incredible, the teams. Like you look at the 2003-2004 team and how that was the Arsenal Invincibles year, and you're like, okay, it's kind of understandable that Man United team didn't necessarily achieve what, you know, other Man United teams did. But you look at it, and before Rio Ferdinand went out, they were first and they were top of the league in January. It was like they ended up blowing it down the stretch because their defense was so shot after Rio left. But with a midfield of a Nicky Butt who was on his way out and a Roy Keane who was on the decline, and they brought in Louis Saha and Ruud van Nistelrooy, and they were getting goals. But still, that team, you look at it on paper and it's nowhere near some of the other Manchester United teams, and yet they were still so competitive.
Totally. I mean, don't get me wrong, they had its stars. It really did have its stars, but the real workhorses of the team were the important players for United. Mm-hmm. Darren Fletcher, I've already said. Michael Carrick to an extent, although I think Michael Carrick is a very talented footballer. Park Ji-sung, another one. Don't think he was especially a greatly talented footballer, but so important. And you know what? Yeah. They're the players that we lack at the minute.
Yeah, I guess kind of the Ole Solskjaer type of player, the player that's okay, you know, riding the bench a few games because they know that they're needed for those one or two matches or the last 10 minutes of a match.
Totally it.
So, I guess, on the topic of Manchester United teams that on paper are overachieving, the 2009-2010 campaign, Cristiano Ronaldo-less Manchester United, now led by Wayne Rooney, who his best goal-scoring record to that point, I think, have been 23 goals. And all of a sudden, he's the number nine. He's playing up top as the natural striker, and he's basically Manchester United's only real goal-scoring option. And he's thriving in that role. He scores 34 goals that season, and arguably his best individual season. He does pick up a couple knocks near the end, which affects both Manchester United's Premier League chances and their UEFA Champions League chances against Bayern Munich. But that individual performance by Wayne Rooney is ultimately not enough to carry them over the line in those competitions.
Am I right in thinking that this is the season? I remember there being a period of Rooney's career where the British press, for some reason, started criticising him being useless at heading and saying, oh, he never scores with his head. He's a rubbish header with the ball.
Yeah, and then he goes out and scores like 10 goals with his head or something like that.
Exactly that. And I remember that just being brilliant. What a way to shut everyone up. It was literally like five headers in a row.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was, I think it was in the Champions League against AC Milan. They go to the San Siro, they win 3-2, and two of those are Rooney-headed goals, and then they come back and he scores another two with his head at Old Trafford.
Love it. I honestly, Wayne Rooney, I mean, this is great because we just get to talk about how good he is, and, you know, I get bored sometimes of criticising him, but this is... I honestly think Wayne Rooney is the best Manchester United player that I've seen, and I mean I'm including Ronaldo in that because, you know, I remember Ronaldo early on, and don't get me wrong, Ronaldo was phenomenal for a period of time at Man United, but Wayne Rooney had a bit more longevity with it. As soon as he came as a kid, you knew what he was about. He gets the ball. There's only one way he's going with it. There's only one place he wants to put the ball, and it's in the net, whether it's him or someone else, he's going that way. And Ronaldo, you remember early on, you know, he used to muck about a little bit, and I don't want to criticize Ronaldo for that because he's the best player. He's, you know, he's probably the most talented player United have ever had. But in terms of pure determination and pure as a fan, when you're watching the game, like the emotion you're feeling is literally being conveyed by one player on the pitch. Wayne Rooney was that player. I just loved him as a player. Brilliant.
Would you say then that maybe this is the start of Rooney at his best? Because obviously we see it statistically. This is the start of the period where he scores the majority of his 253 goals at Manchester United. But he's the only guy left that can do it at this point, with Cristiano Ronaldo and then Tevez gone. And Dimitar Berbatov is a classy striker, don't get me wrong, but this season he was definitely an underperformer.
Yeah, Berbatov was a weird one as well. I remember Berbatov, he had a season where he was getting loads of stick from the crowd, and then I think that the season after that he was like the top scorer in the league. But Rooney and Berbatov was like a total opposite of a partnership, wasn't it, in terms of style of play, total opposites. Did it not click too well that season?
Yeah, I think Berbatov here. I'll pull up the actual statistics. But
yeah, well, I'd be interested to know how many assists Berbatov got that season against how many assists Rooney got, because obviously Rooney outscored him. But I'd be interested to know, because I remember a lot of people questioning Berbatov around that time.
Yeah, so he got 12 goals in the league, and 12 goals overall. I guess he didn't score in any other competition, but.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, his assists aren't here.
Sounds about right, though. Berbatov only turns up when he wants in the league. Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, he had that kind of reputation of being a bit of a lazy player, but if you look at some of the skill moves he had, I guess it kind of made up for it, because he had that brilliant little dummy of that West Ham defender the season before, and then he just squares it across goal for Ronaldo to get in. Because you look at some of the things he does on the ball and wonder how he does it. Just his physique is so weird. He's such a lanky. He looks almost like if Chris Smalling was a striker, but he has incredible footwork.
Yeah, he's a bit like, he's almost like Zlatan in some respects. Berbatov. It was a love-hate relationship. It was the same with Nani. Nani was another one of those players. Massive love-hate relationship. But when he was good, he was real good. And some of the bicycle kicks he scored, he was good when he wanted it.
Yeah, and Nani, of course, I think is the other player that kind of stepped up for Man United. The spotlight a little bit on him, because when he came, he was kind of seen as the heir apparent to Cristiano Ronaldo, on the other side of the pitch. And now with Ronaldo gone, he kind of took up a bit more attacking responsibility, and he seemed to click really well with Wayne Rooney as well down the wing.
That season was great for Nani, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I think the next season, 2010-2011, Nani actually won the Club Player of the Year award.
Yeah. Okay. I remember there being that 2010-11 season, I think, is the season I'm remembering where Nani was actually absolutely dynamite. Mm-hmm. But Nani at times was so frustrating, man. He'd have one good game in six, and that one good game was like our best performance of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember watching him sometimes, and I watch Man United games with my dad, and he would just yell at him sometimes, like, take him on, because he'd get the ball, he'd, you know, beat someone down the wing, and he'd take on the fullback, and he'd be one-on-one and just stand there for, like, 5 seconds. It's like, you don't know whether he's going to do a step over or just hit it and try to cross it in one touch. Like,
He didn't know.
Yeah. No, he probably didn't. I guess that's a strike against his game. He never developed that sort of confidence, but he had such incredible ability. He really could have been such a better player.
I agree. I think that Ferguson said that he was quite a shy, sensitive guy, didn't he? And I'm not saying that you've got to, you know, be like Ronaldo and super macho to succeed, but maybe in that sort of environment, it didn't help him.
Yeah, Wayne Rooney had that an anecdote on BT Sport this season. I think it was after the Cardiff game, where he talked about some of the tactics Sir Alex would use in the locker room or at halftime when talking to them, and Sir Alex was aware that somebody like Nani wouldn't be able to take the same kind of verbal abuse that Wayne Rooney would, so he would direct what he was trying to say to Nani at Rooney, And Rooney would just take it because he understood what was going on.
It's because you know, you knew when Rooney would come out in the second half when he'd have a rollicking, because when Wayne Rooney was playing angry, he was playing brilliant. It was a sight to behold, and it was such a shame when that part of his game got took away.
Yeah, and it was the 2010-11 season, which. I mean, this period is, I guess it's fine. We don't have to stick to the chronology exactly, but, because this is all kind of the same period of Wayne Rooney's career where he is that guy where he's the number one goal scorer for them. The West Ham game, I think they were down 2-0 at halftime, and Wayne Rooney comes out and scores three or four goals. Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually gets suspended because he's so emotional and, he's just finally letting loose on West Ham and scoring all these goals, and he goes up to the camera and says something and gets himself suspended for the FA Cup semi-final.
Oh, that was ridiculous. I remember this. This was ridiculous. They actually suspended him because he swore on camera. You're filming him. He's a football player. You're at a football game. What do you expect? Turn the microphones off. I don't know.
You're at Upton Park, more specifically, too.
You're at Upton Park, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, that I don't know. I really miss that sort of Wayne Rooney as well, because you could kind of tell towards the end of his Manchester United career that it was gone a little bit. But yeah, when he could get angry and focus that on his football, he would change a game for Manchester United.
And you know, it comes with maturity as well. There's no doubt that if Wayne Rooney would continue to play like the 21-year-old Wayne Rooney his entire career, there's no way he'd have lasted so long. There's no way he'd become Manchester United and England's top goal scorer. It just wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you remember back, like, some of the stuff he'd be doing, like, he'd be screaming in refs' faces, like, every other game. It was pretty outrageous at times, but, you know, as a fan, obviously you love to see it, because, like I was saying before, it's exactly what you'd be doing if you were there.
Yeah, and he kind of, from a very early age, he kind of bore it on his shoulders that he was the future of English football, and that definitely weighed on him more at the national team than it did at Manchester United. But part of it was because he seemed so relatable, and he came from a similar background to many of the people who paid to go watch him play.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's a working class lad who's literally worked himself up from the bottom. It's a real success story in a way, but then almost in some ways a tragedy. Obviously we're here to talk about his football more than anything, but it's a tragedy that what happened off the pitch. And I know that, you know, Rooney would have made like, you know, terrible and well publicized bad decisions in his personal life. But how many of those are caused by sort of, I don't know, mental fractures almost from being, like you say, England's golden boy since he was 16 years old? There's a really almost prophetic clip of Sven, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it's Sven talking in an interview, and he's saying, Wayne Rooney is England's golden boy. Don't break him. Don't kill him. He's England's golden boy. And we all know what happened after that.
Yeah. And of course, some of the England failures were not necessarily Wayne Rooney's fault. But
no way.
and really, that 2006 team should have been the greatest England team of all time. But, chemistry and tribalism all play a huge role in the England team in that period. But
Steven Gerrard was playing right wing. It was ridiculous.
Paul Scholes playing on the left wing in the 2004 Euros, yeah.
Absolutely, just stupid. Honest, some of the decisions that England made. Wayne Rooney, despite being England's top goal scorer, should have a World Cup for the player he is.
Yeah. The 2010 one, going into the World Cup, obviously if you look at the result of it, you wouldn't think of it in hindsight, but going into that World Cup, England were seen as one of the favorites to win the tournament. And Wayne Rooney got injured again near the end of the season. I don't think he broke his foot, or I don't think it was as serious as it was in 2006, but it was another huge question mark hanging over him, where for 2 months he had to sit with everyone wondering the exact same thing about him. and he's not able to express himself or whatever.
Yeah, I remember the injuries before the World Cups. It was so frustrating, that one. And you just knew that they were going to rush him back and he wasn't going to be able to perform as properly. You know what? There's a famous clip during that World Cup where I think the game finished 1-1. I think it was England versus Algeria. Maybe it was 0-0. Don't know whether you know.
Algeria was 0-0 and the USA game was 1-1.
Oh, okay. Well, the Algeria one after that, when there was boos all around the stadium, well, from the England fans, mm-hmm. and obviously directed at their own players, and the famous clip of Rooney saying, you know, oh, that's how your own fans support you, booing, is it? As if to say, you know, that's not support, that's not how you're going to get behind us. And the press had a go at Rooney for that. I will say to this day that Wayne Rooney was absolutely correct.
Yeah. I think that's a fair take. I do have some sympathy for fans that pay for flights to a tournament and then get met with absolutely abysmal football. But
I've done it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I've never been to a World Cup. I've never been to an international tournament. But that England performance, I think, is worthy of some criticism.
Yeah.
But in terms of Wayne Rooney, I think he was carrying a lot at that point, not just individually, but for the England team as well, because he was starting to be looked at as kind of the leader at that point. So maybe he thought he was sort of he was coming into that David Beckham role of, you know, taking the brunt of the damage or whatever from the fans. But I don't know. Stuff like that, I guess I kind of disagree with you in that respect. Sometimes I think Wayne Rooney would say things or just misinterpret things with the press that he didn't have to go out and say that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
He didn't have to, no. And no, I don't think he was right to do it. However, I think the sentiment behind what he said was correct. And that I personally don't think that fans should feel... I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, your team puts in a poor performance. I understand it's not good. I understand it's frustrating. But it's so easy for us as fans to say, oh, they didn't try hard enough. They didn't try hard enough. Maybe the other team just made it look that way and our team just weren't on it today. You should support your team through thick and thin. And you've got no entitlement to see your team win.
Putting it that way, I 100% agree. I see where you're coming from now. That resonated with me from this season, actually, with some of the people I see on Twitter, you know, going at Marcus Rashford for having an Instagram account when it's saying, you know, get off the Instagram, you know, come back next season and actually perform or something like that. When it's the summer, he literally cannot do anything about his Manchester United record right now.
He's on holiday. Yeah,
enjoy his vacation.
People seem to think that they own footballers, and I think we always have, and I don't know why. It's a weird thing that we have, and I don't understand it. I think it's because we put so much money into football and watching it however you watch it.
Yeah.
And maybe we do feel entitled because of that, but we shouldn't at the end of the day. You know, it's sport. If we won every game, it wouldn't be fun.
Yeah. Well,
although it was quite fun.
Yeah, it would actually be pretty fun.
Yeah, it would.
If we could just win some games, that would be more fun than what is happening right now.
There's like a few.
Okay, so this period, 2009, 2010, 2010, 2011, and then eventually 11-12, it's impossible to talk about this part of Wayne Rooney's career without, as we've been talking about a little bit, some of the off-the-field stuff, because at the beginning of that 2010-2011 season, when Rooney's coming back from the World Cup, but also coming off his best season as an individual player for Manchester United, and as a goal scorer, striker in general, he comes out, and for the first half of the season, he scores maybe one goal, and he has the story come out, the infidelity while his wife is pregnant, and then also the contract dispute where Sir Alex comes out and says Wayne Rooney wants to leave the club. And it seems like, from everyone I've talked to so far on this podcast, that is a marked point of change when it comes to their views on Wayne Rooney, where it definitely becomes a bit more negative for them from that point. And I was wondering, since we're similar in age and our Manchester United experience, what that was like for you. Because for me, I wasn't directing anger at Wayne Rooney or anything. I was just really sad that two of my favorite players would be leaving the club within 2 years of each other. And then I was overjoyed when he did sign the contract extension, even though he was playing poorly, because I knew what he was capable of, and it seemed like only a matter of time before he'd get out of it.
I'm trying to just sort of trace my mind back to how I thought at the time, because I remember there being like a real... I remember feeling let down at the time, and the anger only came when the sort of rumours came out linking him to City.
Yeah.
And that was when it got like, okay, what's going on here? Go on.
I never actually believed the Manchester City link. I always thought that was just a newspaper rumor, like because they named the usual suspects. They named Chelsea, they named Real Madrid, and Manchester City, which at that time were the three big money clubs that were buying whoever they could get their hands on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think there was maybe something to it slightly, but. Maybe it was just an agent, you know, and his agent at the time. Was it Stretford? I think it was Stretford, if
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, Paul Stretford, I think.
Yeah, Paul Stretford. I think that maybe Wayne Rooney was getting bad advice from all angles, and you could see from stuff that was going on away from football that was the case. And I mean this with the greatest respect, and it's not something you can say with a lot of respect, really. But Wayne Rooney, I don't think, is a very intelligent person. And I think he needs the right people around him. And I think at that time of his life, he didn't. And he just had gone completely off the rails, I think, in certain respects. Yeah. So the sort of contract stuff and the confusion around it, looking back, you can almost forgive him. But I remember at the time being pretty disappointed and pretty angry. And I remember actually recently, not too long ago, it was probably about 4 years ago, maybe. People were talking about Wayne. Oh, it was when he passed the goal scoring record. People were talking about Wayne Rooney, and you're gonna hate me for this because this is just a total bollock statement. I said that Wayne Rooney wasn't a Manchester United legend.
Ugh.
And I went on this tirade about it, and I don't know why. I think it was around the time that he was really not performing well on the pitch at that time. And for some reason, I let that tarnish my memory of him. And this whole City business, you know, that did leave a sour taste.
I mean, hey, guys, I've said things that are, looking back in hindsight, are pretty ridiculous now. Yeah. In my... I've been doing this for about 2 years now, a little over 2 years. I've been writing for the Busby Babe since the beginning of the 17-18 season, and my first submission was saying that Nemanja Matic is the midfield answer that we've been waiting for since Paul Scholes. So
you know what? No, you know what? I can forgive you for that one. That's not too bad. You must have had a worse one than that. There must be a youngster that you've written a piece about saying he's going to be the new Ronaldo, and he's now playing for Accrington.
I don't know if I've had a career, I guess, quote unquote career, long enough to maybe make a statement like that. But I've definitely had some bad opinions. I've said that Jose Mourinho should have been given to the end of the season. That was before the Liverpool game, though. That was when Mourinho was still in charge. After he was sacked, I was pretty okay with it. But I don't know. I'm trying to think now of bad things that I've said.
You know what? Right, I feel like I'll take my opportunity now on the Rooney Rewind podcast to take back that statement that Wayne Rooney isn't a Manchester United legend because he put in a couple of transfer requests. I think that around the time, some of the reasons I gave was he doesn't have a good rapport with fans. Like, who cares? He's our top goal scorer. Like, Rio Ferdinand put in transfer requests. Roy Keane put in transfer requests. They're legends. Rooney's a legend. What a stupid thing to say past Gaz.
This is good timing because the episode before this, I had a Liverpool fan on, one of the writers for the Liverpool SB Nation site, and he didn't just say that Wayne Rooney is one of the best Man United players of all time. He said he's the greatest Premier League player of all time, and that he should be on Manchester United's Mount Rushmore of players.
I love the idea of United building a Mount Rushmore of players outside Old Trafford.
Yeah, he also made the joke that would actually require the Glazers to put some money into the club to fund a statue.
And mate, don't give them any more statue ideas, because they won't put the money in. They'll just burn down the ones they've already got. They'll melt them down.
Oh, I suppose they're doing that metaphorically now with their treatment of the club, but. Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast series.
yeah.
So these three seasons, the third one being 2011-2012, another one where Rooney eclipses that 34 goals that he scored 2 years earlier, and I think he's second in the Premier League in goals behind Robin van Persie the year before he comes to Manchester United. But that season, we also don't win anything. So 2009-2010, we won the League Cup, which is something. But we didn't win the Premier League. We finished second to Chelsea. And then 2011-2012, the heartache on the final day with the Aguero goal. And Manchester United finished the season empty-handed, despite getting 89 points and looking really good for a lot of the season.
Mm.
So the two best statistical seasons of Wayne Rooney's career, Manchester United look shorthanded apart from Wayne Rooney. And do you think that maybe that's part of the... Because Rooney seemed to always play better when he had a reliable strike partner with him. And he was well known for developing really good partnerships with a lot of the players that came through Manchester United at that time. Cristiano Ronaldo, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Dimitar Berbatov, Chicharito, Robin van Persie, and even Juan Mata to some extent under Louis van Gaal. Do you think that when Rooney is relied upon to be the primary goal scorer, that's maybe a bad sign for Manchester United because he works better when he's not the person that needs to carry the entire weight of the offense?
Yeah, I think so. I think Wayne Rooney was always thought of that type of player. And, you know, because some of Wayne Rooney's... Sometimes when you're watching Wayne Rooney, if he doesn't score a goal, the biggest cheer he'll get is for a tackle just outside of his own box. Mm-hmm. And often if he's playing at a striker, you know, that's something you're going to miss from your team, from your midfield. So Wayne Rooney was always thought of, for me anyway, as a more creative attacking midfielder, very aggressive attacking midfielder, though. And then later on in his career, I wanted to see him more as a box-to-box. I expected that to be his progression. I just don't think that the United team at the time was the right team for him to transition correctly into that role. But yeah, definitely in his pomp, I thought of him as a player to play behind the striker, and you know, you forget how many goals he scored during that period, and it was just because we relied on him to do it, like you say.
Yeah, in those three seasons, he scored 84 goals, which is a pretty sizable chunk of his 253, and they were pretty successful periods for Manchester United. Like 2010-11, they won their 19th Premier League title. And got to a Champions League final. Definitely were not of the quality of the Barcelona team they played in the final. But the fact that they even got there was pretty remarkable considering who was behind Wayne Rooney at the time.
Yeah, that was a really weird Champions League final. That, because like, I mean, sorry, I don't mean to brag here, but I totally mean to brag. the Moscow one, I went to all three around that period. And the Moscow one, you know, you thought, yes, you know, we got a chance here, we could win it. You know, we did win it, brilliant. Then Rome, you thought, yes, we can definitely take Barcelona. We are definitely good enough. Obviously didn't in the end. And then Wembley, we pretty much accepted we were going to lose. We were just like, we have no chance here. Let's just enjoy it.
Yeah, I was, I'd gone back and listened to, because I didn't listen to the United Rant podcast until a few years ago. So I went back and listened to one of the older episodes from that 2010-11 final. And it's kind of the same attitudes. Like they did like a public recording and everyone around them was like just excited to be there. Like it seemed like a really fun experience to fight the fact that they lost 3-1.
Hey, you know what? I'll say this about, you know, traveling and watching Manchester United in Europe. It's a great experience no matter what happens. I've seen, despite seeing United lose Champions League finals, I probably had a better time in Rome than I did in Moscow. It's all about the atmosphere on the day and enjoying it.
It's probably because you didn't get the same food poisoning that Sir Alex said the team got.
Yeah, that might be it, actually. And I didn't have to get a 4 a.m. flight back to Manchester.
Yeah. So, these 3 years then, do you think that this is Rooney's prime, like beginning and end of his prime? Or do you think that maybe it's not so arbitrary like that? It's not so cut?
No, I'd say Wayne Rooney's prime is maybe slightly earlier. I know, you know, you talk about these periods as statistically his best period,
mm-hmm.
but Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez was something to behold. And even though Rooney had players slightly outperforming him, you know, Ronaldo was outperforming him, obviously, but mm-hmm. that almost helped him, Wayne Rooney. And maybe this is something to do with his mentality as a guy, you know, it's when all the focus is on him, maybe he would prefer all the focus to be on someone else a little bit and you know, then he can perform slightly more quietly.
I think we see that a little bit with his England performances as well, because by that time, you know, David Beckham, Michael Owen, even Lampard and Gerrard to some extent were kind of on their decline when it came to their England performances. And Wayne Rooney's was the primary goal scorer, but also the primary playmaker for England at that time. And because his tournament record is weird, because 2008 he wasn't at the Euros, but the 2012 Euros he only played in two games because he was suspended again for the first couple group stage matches. And in those two games he played, he was the best player in the Italy game, where they were pretty much swamped by a better Italy team. And he scored the only goal for them in, against Ukraine in a pretty sloppy performance as well. So,
racking my brain well here, you know. You are racking my brain. I'm remembering the flashbacks now from 2012.
Yeah, I'm a historian, so I've memorized these sort of things, I guess. But, yeah, it's... I think it's really hard to gauge how good Wayne Rooney was, because what you see in an overall 90-minute performance than what you look at in hindsight with these statistics is sometimes, you know, skews your vision a little bit.
Yeah, but totally. I mean, Wayne Rooney was totally brilliant in that period, though. And, you know, there's a good six-year period that he was dynamite for Man United, no matter who he played alongside. And that's maybe the biggest testament to Rooney, you know, that he went through so many strike partners and worked with every single one. How often do we talk about great players, but somehow say, oh, they couldn't play with so-and-so, but they couldn't play with so-and-so, they couldn't play under these circumstances? Wayne Rooney was ready to go, man. Wherever you put him, striker, attacking midfield, even at centre mid, you know, he would have played. He's played a few blinders there. Just not consistently. He was such an important player to have at the club during that period, and that period of maybe a lack of investment when certain players left and we didn't bring the right players in.
Yeah, a piece of commentary that kind of sticks out on that very thing was in 2007, 2008, when he and Tevez, everyone's saying that there's no way they could be on the pitch at the same time because they're too similar. And I think they put out a 4-0 win in that short period where they were 4-0 FC again against Middlesbrough or Aston Villa or someone, and Rooney backheels it to Tevez. And it's like their chemistry is just perfectly in sync. And the commentator says, who says those two can't play together?
I think I've seen that one. I remember that one quite clearly. The little flick, is it? Where Tevez flicks it into Rooney or the other way around. Top goal.
Yeah.
But then Van Persie as well. Because Van Persie was one where you didn't see that one, you know, necessarily coming, especially with the transfer request around the time, because he wasn't getting enough games. And because it was really, I remember everyone sort of finding the transfer request funny, because before Van Persie arrived, Rooney's transfer request was due to a lack of ambition shown by Manchester United, which as fans we probably agreed with. You know, we weren't signing the right players, we were showing a lack of ambition. But then when we showed ambition and we signed Van Persie, then Rooney was complaining that he got kept out of the team.
Yeah.
So it seems like we couldn't keep him happy.
But it wasn't even that he was, I guess, out of the team. It was just that he wasn't playing that as big of a role. He was getting loads of assists. Yeah. I think he may have had more assists in the Premier League than he did goals that season. Just he found Robin Van Persie. And maybe the best Manchester United goal I've ever seen was that he lobbed it to Van Persie from the halfway line and he hits it one time into the back of the net to win the Premier League.
Yeah. Great goal.
It just shows how, I guess, his field awareness, which is something you don't necessarily see from strikers that often, not just because they don't have it necessarily, but because they don't have opportunities to show it. And Wayne Rooney could play a ball from anywhere on the pitch to anyone and drop it on a dime.
Hey, now, something I said a little bit earlier when I said Wayne Rooney isn't a very intelligent man, can I just say that that is completely the opposite case when we're talking about Wayne Rooney as a footballer.
Yeah.
The guy is instinctively a genius as a footballer. It was the same, like you were saying then, pitch awareness, exactly the same as Paul Scholes. He knew where everyone was, no matter where they were on the pitch. And for someone as an attacking midfielder, that's exactly what you need, because Wayne Rooney only had one idea when he got the ball, and that was go forward. And he's not necessarily looking for a goal for himself. He can flick it on. He can find the right pass. He knows where everyone is on the pitch. A very intelligent footballer.
Yeah, and he talked early in his career about the incredible passing and ability and awareness from both Roy Keane and Paul Scholes, which if you're a striker coming through a team, that's probably the best center mid partnership you could possibly ask for. And you could definitely, I guess, see the influence that their sort of passing style had on him and the way that he developed as a passer as well.
Oh yeah, totally. There were some times in that season where he was pulling off Scholes-esque passes, and that was when I was sort of saying, you know, this is it, Rooney, centre mid. He's box to box. He's going to be brilliant. Box to box midfielder or a Scholes-esque sort of playmaker. He can do it all, and it just didn't work. But it was probably due to just United in that period, because let's not forget that period that season with Van Persie. We were crap that season. We really were.
Was it the 13-14 or 14-15?
Fergie's last season.
Okay. Yeah
Fergie's last season.
Definitely in midfield we were lacking.
and you know, we came back from behind in a lot of games, which was obviously entertaining and good to watch, but it was questionable at times. Fergie really did drag us over the line. And you know what? One of the real positives, like, I know we're here to talk about a specific period, but one of the only positives of that Fergie last season, Moyes first season transition was Wayne Rooney, who I actually think had a good season under Moyes.
Yeah. He's our top goal scorer. He had 20 goals, I think.
I was going to say, what are the actual statistics? 20 goals. Like, I remember Wayne Rooney having a good season that season, and he just must have been so frustrated.
Mm-hmm. And you can see it in specific games. I remember being 2-0 down against Stoke at Old Trafford, and that was the period where it was starting to turn on David Moyes, where people were realizing, oh, we've made a terrible mistake. It was the arrested development moment. I've made a huge mistake. and it wasn't David Moyes that got them going, it was Wayne Rooney. And that was a comeback win, I think one of the few that they actually overturned the deficit that they built off of defensive liabilities like Phil Jones and Chris Smalling and a very old Rio Ferdinand. But Wayne Rooney got them going. And with players, I guess Chicharito, I think, was also one of the goal scorers in that game. But he's somebody, another strike partnership that Wayne Rooney worked out perfectly, because Chicharito is the guy that gets in space and one touch, you know, either gets past someone or gets it in the goal. And Wayne Rooney was just like conducting the orchestra at that point. It was it just mentally and physically is just carrying Manchester United over the finish line. Like, he was not going to let that game go against them.
I cannot believe we've got 50 minutes in and we've not mentioned Chicharito once, you know.
Yeah.
Because Rooney and Hernandez, like, we're talking about his partnerships, and I'm just thinking, like, first team players. But Hernandez, when he came on, often at times at the end of the game, it was like, you only had two players that had any energy left. One was Wayne Rooney, the other was Hernandez, who had just come on the pitch.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of the goals came from.
Yeah, I kind of made an early in Chicharito's career, I think it was his first season, I made a comparison to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as the super sub. And that's kind of, sadly, what he came to be at Manchester United. He never became the first choice center forward, but he was brilliant coming off the bench.
Colin, you can't claim that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comparison. I'm not letting you have that one. We were all doing it.
Well, I'm an isolated incident, Gaz. I live in Mississippi.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but you know, another one I will claim actually as a bad take. I thought Tom Cleverley was going to be another midfielder genius.
And you know what? I'm not going to let you have that one either, because you'd fit right in at Old Trafford every week, because we were all saying the same thing. I remember being at Wembley in the Community Shield. I think it was the Community Shield before when we played Man City. We came from behind and Nani scored a couple. He might have even scored a hat trick. And I remember everyone saying the same thing. Oh, Cleverley's starting. Hey, he's the new Scholes. He's the new Scholes, like Cleverley, I'm telling you. And we all thought it. And then, and let's not forget, Ferguson on Phil Jones.
Yeah.
The next Duncan Edwards, he said.
For a while it looked like it could have been true. Tom Cleverley, it didn't last as long because, like you said, that 2012-2013 season, we kind of saw it was not going to be the case. Tom Cleverley scored that one screamer against Newcastle, and I think at that point everyone made the Paul Scholes comp. It was like, oh, he's gonna wait on the edge of the box and bash him in.
Yeah, yeah. Tom, I tell you what, Tom Cleverley during that Moy season, has there been many worse seasons for a United player than him in that season?
I felt for him a little bit because... I did. And not that he didn't deserve some of the criticism because he wasn't playing well, but it was almost like David Moyes let him take the brunt of the criticism when David Moyes was actually at fault for a lot of things that people were pointing at Tom Cleverley for. The organization of the team at that point... And now, in hindsight, we're able to realize with what people were saying about what was going on behind the scenes. But David Moyes was Evertonizing the football club. He got rid of everyone that Sir Alex Ferguson had in place and brought in people from Everton. And I guess Phil Neville had some experience at Manchester United. But when you completely change your coaching staff from a club that finishes in 7th and 8th place and try to coach up the first team, or the team that finished first in the Premier League the season before, the result now we see is 7th place.
Yeah. And you know, we all saw it at the time as well when all the staff left, and people often look, I know it's easy to look back in hindsight, but people often say that that was his key mistake, sacking all the staff and getting his own men in. And I think that I might have made this up, but I'm pretty sure I saw a Moyes interview recently. It might have been on BN Sport, where he said that was his number one regret, that he should never have got rid of all of the men at Man United. And it's right.
Yeah. But like you said, Wayne Rooney had a really good season that year. So I guess
West Ham goal.
Yeah. Oh. David Beckham is here.
I tell you what that was. I think there are very few times that I'm listening to United on the radio, because like it's just so frustrating to listen to football on the radio. I hate it. But I was driving when that goal went in, and they were saying it's Beckham, it's another Beckham, and I remember just thinking like, oh no, it's not, guaranteed. And what a goal! Maybe his best.
It's unfortunate that it was surrounded by such a mediocre season, but that goal is going to be up there with his bicycle kick against City and his volley against Newcastle, I think.
Yeah, I was listening to sorry to plug other podcasts while I'm on this podcast, but I was listening to the Peter Crouch podcast the other day, and they were genuinely discussing whether Rooney shinned it for that goal against City. They were saying that it hit his shin.
See, I've had this argument with other people where they're saying the same sort of thing, that, you know, technically it wasn't a bicycle kick, but my argument is, why does that matter? It went exactly where it was supposed to go. It shouldn't matter if he hit it with his heel. Like, it was a brilliant goal either way.
Hey, have you ever tried to kick a football in the top corner of a goal? Have you ever tried it, Colin?
Yeah.
Okay, now try doing it with your shin and tell me which one's more difficult.
And do it backwards. Like, yeah. turn your back to the goal and have Nanny send you across.
I know. And this is the case for all acrobatic goals like that, but it was a really poor cross as well. It took a deflection and, you know, that just makes the goal even better.
Yeah, that really wasn't a great performance by Man United either. It's like, after City had equalized, that was kind of a... It didn't look like it was going to be finish with a winner. It looked like it could probably just finish like another draw like they did earlier in the season.
I remember, it's one of my favourite football memories, this actually, football-related memories. I was on holiday when we played that goal. I was on like a family holiday in Spain. And it was obviously brilliant. It was before like the time that I had my own mobile phone and stuff. I remember just being like absolutely mesmerised by the goal. And I went to like an arcade or an internet cafe or something. And I was just sat there on the PC, like I put €5 in the slot. I'm just sat there. I've got YouTube up and I'm just watching this Rooney goal over and over again, constantly, for like my full hour's allotment. And then like I turned around at one point after like 10 minutes and I realised there was loads of like Spanish kids just like stood behind me, just watching this goal. Didn't speak a word of English, but all of them like going crazy, holding their heads, running around, shouting. And this guy came up to me today. He was like, today, this happened today, Manchester. I was like, yeah, in Manchester today. And they were all just like, oh, best goal ever. I loved it.
That makes me think of the in-betweeners when they're like in Greece or something. And he's wearing the Man United shorts and the kid just goes, Manchester, Manchester, Manchester.
Now that bit, right, that bit resonates so much for anyone like who's a United fan and has gone on lads' holidays abroad in Europe, because that's all you get. You don't get Manchester United. It's just Manchester, Manchester. That no one ever refers to us as Manchester United.
Which now that could lead to some confusion now that the other team is actually good, I suppose.
Well, exactly. Well, it says a lot that they still don't. You still go abroad and people are just like, they see your badge and it's just Manchester. I'm not sure if maybe when people walk with a City badge, they say City. I don't know.
Or they say, ew.
Yeah, they say, who is that?
All right, so we're approaching the end and I've got two questions that I ask every guest. But first, I want to get to this last one that was sort of on topic with what we were talking about before we started recording with the Glazer ownership. Do you think that Wayne Rooney was wasted in a sense by Manchester United not making better transfers after Cristiano Absolutely. Ronaldo?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been talking about that period of Wayne Rooney's career and you know, the goals that he scored. And you just think that, can you imagine him with the right partner at that time? United could have done unbelievable things in that period. And, you know, we still won titles and had successes, but we should have won another Champions League at the minimum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 2010-2011 season, I think, is my favorite Wayne Rooney season, because you see the two halves almost of his Manchester United career where he's totally bombarded with criticism from the press and from fans for his off the field stuff and his contract dispute in the first half of the season. And then you see him shed all of that in the second half and literally carry Manchester United to the Premier League title and to the Champions League final, because Dimitar Berbatov had stopped scoring by January that season. And it was Wayne Rooney and Chicharito that really were the goal scorers of that season. Rooney scored 16 goals that season. And I think 15 of them were in the second half of the season. And he was just the man, I think, maybe more than in any other season in his Manchester United career.
Yeah, I'd agree. It would have been maybe better for him to have not been the man, like as yeah. we said before, yeah. for him to have someone else with him, and maybe it would have been better for the team as a whole.
Yeah, the transfer policy definitely not helping him, and it something that popped up on Twitter the other day with the first Glazer transfer window in 2005, the four transfers in, or that 2005-2006 season, Edwin van der Sar for £2 million, Nemanja Vidic for £7 million, Patrice Evra for £5 million, and Park Ji-sung for £4 million. It was like, You really can't get much better than that. You get one of the best goalkeepers, one of the best goalkeepers of all time for $2 million, one of the best left backs in the Premier League era for $5 million, and then one of the best center backs of all time for $7 million. And I'm pretty sure
Everett just played in a Champions League final as well at that point.
Yeah, Monaco.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know how we got him for that price. But I remember Vidic being like, I can't even remember where we got Vidic from.
Yeah, it was somewhere in Serbia, I think, that Red Star.
I remember the Vidic one being just like, who's this? Who's this guy? What's going on? And then I think he came on and maybe was subbed off at halftime, or maybe he came on at halftime in a game and he was like appalling. I think it might have been against Tottenham. I remember thinking, we've made a horrible mistake.
Yeah.
Right, sorry, that's just my cat you've heard coming in the room there.
No worries. I kept mine outside because he's pretty loud too.
Please tell me your cat's called Wayne or something.
No, his name is Ike, but I've always wanted like a pit bull and named him Rooney or something like that.
The amount of people around where I grew up on, and there'll be loads of council estates in Manchester with dogs that are about 10 years old now called Wazza, honestly. and the amount of lads that I remember at the time, everyone thinking, when the big Rooney saga was coming out and the transfer requests and all the rumours, I remember loads of people's biggest concern were, I'm going to have to rename my dog.
I wonder, that would be a really interesting survey to go around Manchester and see what people's pets are named. see what people's pets are named at what times. Like, if people in 2005 had, like, a French bulldog named Eric or something like that.
Mate, never mind bulldogs. My brother, his middle name is Yap. And my other brother's middle name is Keen.
Well done, well done. So what's your middle name then?
I'm just named after someone, so my middle name's Paul and it's not after Scholes.
Yeah, but you could definitely tell people that it is though.
Yeah, that's just what I tell people, just because, well, the interesting thing is actually my brother Henry, he's got two middle names. He's called John Yap, but Yap is in Dutch is John, so his middle name is John.
Well done.
which is just been his nickname since. John.
Alright, so the last two questions I ask everyone, and if the answer to this next question is Wayne Rooney, then perfect. But the first one is, who is your footballing hero and why?
Oh, my footballing hero. You know what? I'm torn. I liked the way that Paul Scholes went about his game, and this isn't necessarily saying that this is how I expect or think that football players should behave off the pitch.
Yeah,
but Paul Scholes just would turn up, have a game of football, and go home, go to bed, be in bed for 8 o'clock watching Corrie. He was the most boring guy in the world, and he just kept himself to himself. Wasn't a celebrity, even though he so could have been, because he was one of the most famous footballers going, and I just love the way he conducted himself. So Paul Scholes, and obviously, you know, this isn't even talking about on the pitch, how good he was on the pitch, just one of those players where he got it, and no matter what scenario he got it in, you were calm and you knew that something good was going to happen. He'd spot things that, you know, you're there in the crowd with a perfect view of the pitch, and he'd spot things that you just didn't even think were possible and were on. And then obviously the fact that he came in with the youngsters at the time, the class of 92, won so much in that period. And then the youngsters that have sort of played with him after that, you know, your Ronaldo and your Rooney's, obviously. I think Scholes, for me growing up, was probably my footballing hero, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I loved Paul Scholes. I didn't get to see most of the Roy Keane era of Manchester United. I only got to see the tail end of it. So to me, I say this with a certain amount of bias, but to me, Paul Scholes is the greatest midfielder of all time. And I think that's definitely just because of my exposure as well as what he was actually able to do. So Because there is that argument between United fans whether Roy Keane or Paul Scholes was better. So to me, I think I would go with Paul Scholes.
Yeah, I'd go with Paul Scholes as well. I mean, with Keane's qualities came a few negatives as well. And, you know, there was a few things that came with Roy Keane that you didn't necessarily want. Like, you know, you remember the time he criticised all the youngsters on MUTV and stuff like that. You'd never see Paul Scholes doing that. So I like the way he conducted himself, Scholes.
It's so funny how that's such a negative moment of Roy Keane's career, but every single one of us would pay a certain amount of money to see that video.
Oh, I know. Oh, tell me how long I've spent trying to find it online.
Oh. Yeah, there's no way that video, like, maybe it'll come up at some point, but I think the transcript was enough for some people, but I would love to see the video of that.
Oh, if I can get a man on the inside at MUTV, I'll get him digging through the archives.
Right, yeah. Yeah, let me know about that, if you can get an inside man at MUTV.
It certainly won't be me after we've just been slagging off the Glazers for an hour anyway.
So, there is one more question, but I'm going to add a question in because this is my podcast, so I can. What is your favorite Wayne Rooney goal? Or Wayne Rooney moment, I guess.
Favorite Wayne Rooney moment. I don't want to go for the obvious two goals, even though that Newcastle one and maybe the moment that I told you before with the Spanish kids. That moment with the Spanish kids was probably like one of my favorite Wayne Rooney moments, because it was just like communicating with kids that can't speak my language. It was great. Mm-hmm. But my favorite Wayne Rooney moment, probably when Phil Bardsley knocked him out in his kitchen,
and he comes back and scores the knockout goal.
You know what? Actually, you know what? That for the celebration, that can be my number two behind the overhead kick, yeah, and the Newcastle goal, number three.
Yeah, I did get a bit tired of that celebration because for a while, for like three straight FIFA video games, that was the only Wayne Rooney celebration they would do.
Oh, yeah, them FIFA games, though, they're rubbish for celebrations. Like, yeah. A player does it once and that's all they do then.
Yeah. Like, yeah, Paul Pogba's still dabbing when he scores now. And he hasn't done that since his first season at Man United.
I know. Come on, EA. Get to grips with it, you know.
Yeah. Okay, last question, and this is the big one that some people, one person didn't even give an answer because he thinks it's too soon. But what do you think Wayne Rooney's Manchester United legacy will be?
I think that to rate that, you've got to sort of compare it to other legends.
Mm-hmm.
This almost seems really such a menial thing to do, but to suggest that, to compare legends on legendary status, like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think he'll be revered in the same way that the likes of Eric Cantona was, and the way he's been held aloft. And I certainly don't think he'll be in the same bracket that George Best is considered. But I think that Rooney's United legacy will just be as one of the most talented English players ever, without doubt. He'll be one of the most talented English players ever, and a man who gave his all for United. But, you know, people will always remember them, and it will always tarnish his legacy. And even though he did give everything on the pitch,
yeah, that's what I was going to say about the sort of asterisk that comes with the adjective talented, the most talented, because that doesn't always necessarily mean that he lived up to that talent. And I think that's definitely a part of Wayne Rooney's career, particularly his later years.
Oh, okay. Here's Wayne Rooney's Manchester United legacy for you then. And this is a compliment. You might take this the wrong way, but this is genuinely a compliment to Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney, United's greatest ever goal scorer. That is what he is as a fact.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be remembered as one of our best players during that period in all aspects of his game. He'll even be remembered as a great leader for Manchester United. However, he'll also be remembered. I also don't think Wayne Rooney hit his potential. Despite all of those things?
That's definitely a fair observation. Especially that you see those 3 years that we talked about in this episode that he was producing and carrying Manchester United, and perhaps it was a little bit of the lack of help he was getting in the transfer market, but after that, he kind of... I guess maybe after the Moyes season was when he really started tailing off, but you see that happen alongside people his same age, like Messi and Ronaldo, scoring even more goals each season. And even players like Drogba or Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you know, strikers that we may not rate as highly as Wayne Rooney, they were scoring goals well into their 30s.
Yeah, I think Wayne Rooney, towards the end of his career, was managed dreadfully. I mean, I don't know what happened. To be honest, I'll be honest, I didn't watch much of him after he left United. I've not seen much of him in the MLS. I didn't watch much of him at Everton. But at United, he was mismanaged. And it was just poor management, really. They didn't have the right people in charge to deal to sort of extend his United career.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. I want to thank my guest, Gaz Drinkwater, again for such a great conversation on Wayne Rooney and reminding me which of my poor takes are not original. And be sure to give him a follow on Twitter at @radio_Gaz. And you can also follow Full Time Devils at Full Time Devils and check out their YouTube channel as well and their podcast, which is coming out weekly. You can find it on iTunes under Full Time Devils. And if you haven't already, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on the Busby Babe channel. We're going to get some new content out next week previewing the preseason tour of Australia and Thailand. And Matt and I will also go over the transfer business that has taken place so far with Daniel James and Aaron Wan-Bissaka signing for Manchester United. And possibly, if news is to be believed, Bruno Fernandes maybe by the end of this week. So... stay tuned and keep a lookout for us, and thanks for listening.